Rave Radio. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of AB Insider. I'm your host, Johnny. That's my name. I say a few things. If I sound a little tired because I was up late with THX and some droids and watching stuff at the film festival with Star Wars in Mill Valley last night, George Lucas nonsense, I was. So I'm a little tired, but never too tired to talk audio and automation. Today, I'm speaking with Tim McInerney, who is the Director of Product Marketing at Savant. But before I bring him on the show, I'd like to thank my sponsor as always. It's Ingram Micro. They are the world's largest distributor or technology distributor, delivering flexible multi-channel supply solutions and more. If you head over to ingrammicro.com, you can check out all the product offerings they have. You might be using some already. And anyway, you can check them out. Please do so. As I mentioned, Tim, thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. If for everyone out there, we talk about automation a lot and AV and things like that, controls. And Savant is one of the major players out there. They're not like the, you know, one of the longest running ones, but they're one of the major names out there. And they've been making some big strides in the last few years and especially in the last few weeks, honestly. We'll get into that a little bit later in the show. What I'd like to do first, actually, is if maybe we can talk a little bit, kind of a general overview of what Savant is as an automation company and has to offer. If you have any cool stories you'd like to share or any unique applications with Savant, that'd be kind of cool. Maybe you can just give us a little general overview of what who Savant is and what you guys have to offer.
Yeah, sure. So we're a smart home and automation company. We focus on, you know, really what we call the four main pillars of home automation and automation in general. It's entertainment, safety, climate, as well as lighting. Obviously we can control and automate a ton of different stuff as well. Things that are outside of, you know, some of those exact categories like your pool and spa, your irrigation system. Basically anything that can be controlled with Savant. And you know, the way we kind of look at really the industry and, you know, automation in general, we look at it kind of differently in the sense of we like to try and say, hey, you know what, this stuff shouldn't need to be hand programmed all the time. You shouldn't have to go in and say, hey, I got to write code to get, you know, a couple things to work. And, you know, I got to write code in a big house maybe with 20 rooms. I got to write, you know, hours and hours or weeks of programming. We say, hey, you know what should happen? It should be like your computer. You plug in something into a USB port, and you pick from a list of things what it is, and you know, the system, that the computer should figure out kind of on its own what should happen there. We do the same thing. We have a programming environment we call Blueprint. You can, you know, really just drag and drop in the devices that you want to control or you want in your system, hook them up in the software just like you would in real life. Say, hey, you know what, I'm going to connect this Ethernet port here, and I'm going to connect this HDMI port there, and I'm going to plug in this, this one's on Wi-Fi, and it's going to be on this network. And then in the software, you just hit go, and we do all the behind-the-scenes, you know, hard, heavy lifting for you.
Well, how am I going to charge for hours and hours of grueling code if you're just making it that easy for me?
Well, you know, think of it this way. It's not the hours and hours of code that's really the value add for, you know, for your customer, right? It's really the system programming design time more than it is the actual hand coding of everything, right? You got to think about, well, here, I'm going to design your system in the right way. I'm going to make sure that you've got, you know, the right switch in the middle of everything. I'm going to make sure your network's robust. I'm going to make sure your wiring's good. I'm going to make sure you've got all the right lengths and the right products. And, you know, it's really that design time that that is your claim to fame. And then, you know, instead of spending weeks on top of that programming, you can now say, hey, homeowner or business owner, what do you want it to do besides what is outside the box? And you can go into the software and kind of, you know, go through check boxes and just say, hey, I want it to do this, that. I'm going to make some automation. I'm going to make some special, you know, we call them state triggers, so that when, you know, if then else type statements, you know, but it's really simple and easy to do through a drag and drop interface. And like you said, it's, you know, an interesting story is really how we got, one of our main founders, his name is Bob Madonna. He is chairman of the board. Tsavant, formerly the CEO, he had a home automation system put into his apartment in New York. And, beautiful apartment, put in a very large system. I'm not going to say what the brand was, pick your favorite. They're all, I don't say they're all the same, but, everyone has similar, types of issues. And he said he had a programmer at his kitchen table for 3 weeks trying to get things to work, troubleshooting. I mean, it got to the point where he said that he had carved out space in his refrigerator for the programmer to bring his lunch every day because, that's what he had to do. And it's not a fault of any of the companies that, could do that at the time. That's just the technology, that was there. This was maybe 12 years ago. And he was a technology pioneer. He had founded a telephony switching company back in the, I think it was late 80s, early 90s, sold it to Lucent Technology for a pretty decent sum of money. And as he's watching the, he's a hardware and a software guy. He's watching the person hand code basically his house. And he looked at it and said, this is crazy. I mean, for, this is, I think it was, 2000, 2001. Really modern technology should be able to handle this part of it. And he and some of our other founders set out to kind of make that a reality.
And I like to talk about, that's the blueprint interface, correct? Where it's kind of drag and drop, this Ethernet cord goes here into the back of this device and port one or things like that, versus like handwriting all that string code to tell it to do all that.
Yeah, and that's, one of the benefits is that, again, like your computer, I use my word processor all the time, but I didn't have to write a word processor to write a document, right? I could get one that does all that stuff for me already. I can pick my font and, I can put an image in there and, there's stuff I can do with it, but I didn't have to get behind it and, kind of write the guts of it. But, that's kind of where, the whole Tsavant premise came from is, hey, let's give you a toolkit to do all these things. And you can do, anything you want. But you don't have to go in and do that line-level programming that from a value-add perspective and from a long-term stability perspective, as the system starts to age and starts to change and people want to add new devices, well, how was that code written? Was the person who wrote that code, are they still around at your business? Are they somewhere on a, tropical island sipping margaritas and they've retired? Now, what do you do? Was that code well-written? Was it well-documented? Sometimes, yeah. I mean, it depends. Some companies, they do that and they do it really well. But, a lot of times it doesn't happen. It's kind of, I don't want to say fly by night, but it's, hey, let's code this up and we'll put it in the house and it's great and we'll leave and move on to the next job. And a couple years later, the homeowner goes to add a couple devices and suddenly there's a big expense involved there. And with Blueprint, no, you just go and you grab the things you want and you drag them out and you regenerate the system and boom, you're ready to go. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Just to touch on what you're saying there, if you didn't catch that, I would say a lot of the time the fly-by-nighters, if you will, didn't leave, blueprints or drawings or line diagrams or the code, most importantly, so that way when the next guy goes or whoever down the line doesn't have access to that handwritten code, however well or poorly written it may have been, guess what? The new guy or new company pretty much has to rewrite the existing code to try and match, hopefully, what was there, and then do just the one thing that you wanted to add. Oh, I just need to add a new TV or whatever. It's not as easy as the homeowner might think, or at least in these other systems. But now, like you're saying with Tsavant, you just drag and drop and you're ready to go.
Sure, yeah, and that's one of the great things about it is the software is kind of, we call it self-documenting, right? Because through the software, you had to tell us that those were the things that you wanted. You said, hey, I am going to hook up this HDMI port here to an HDMI port there. Or I'm going to hook up this control port here to a, control port there. And by doing that inside of the software that the software is going to use to generate all the code behind the scenes, it's, you can go in and read it later. Anyone can go and open that up and say, oh, I'm just going to follow this wire. Oh, it is plugged in from here to there. Hey, this if then else statement, is, can look at the drop downs and see exactly what that was. Mm-hmm. and really get, to the point where you can add that new thing or make that change really easily and not have to, you know, again, people, you hear programmers talk about spaghetti code that somebody else wrote. And, you know, we're not the only, you know, control company that has started to take this direction. Some, you know, we kind of were one of the first to do it. Other people have had this kind of same idea through the years, but, you know, through implementation or, you know, financing or whatever reason, they weren't able to make it a reality. Probably a lot of it was, you know, the time in which it was developed. You hear about some, you know, some companies that came out in the 90s that kind of tried a similar vein here, but they just couldn't get it to the point that we were able to take it. And now, you know, almost 10 years later, yeah, like you said, we've got it, you know, very solid. You know, it's in, you know, tens of thousands of homes and businesses and, you know, working really well around the country and around the world.
Right. Also, to kind of touch on it, some of my earliest memories of when someone said Savant, or I think one of the main kind of like awe factor for people wanting Savant to at least when they brought it up to me, you know, like, oh, we want specifically want Savant for this reason. And this was a few years back, and I believe it's changed since then, but it could be wrong. But here in the Bay Area, a lot of people I know, or we, I should say, here on the West Coast, we love our iPhones. I'm not a big iPhone guy, but I use one, and I use Android also. But that being said, Apple. Everybody loves Apple. Everyone, you know, Apple makes the best everything is the thing that I hear nonstop. So, that being said, I think originally and the basis of any Savant system when it first started was driven by a Mac Mini. Is that correct? Inside one of the processors?
Sure, yeah. That's what we used as, you know, we call it the host. You can think of it as kind of the brain of your system.
Okay.
You know, we made a choice in the early stages. We kind of looked at the whole spread of what was out at the time, you know, for developing an operating system and said, okay, well, you know, I kind of got four main choices. We can develop something from scratch completely, mm-hmm. which, you know, some people had done. That's, you know, it's not really from a computer science and hardware, you know, standpoint. Well, gee, if you can leverage something else that someone else has done to get you to where you want to go, then great.
Sure.
So that was, you know, not really the best idea. And then, you know, the other three were, well, let's see, there's Microsoft at the time, Windows, which some people had been using. There was Linux, which was, you know, kind of early at that point. People were using Linux, but it wasn't really, you know, it was just starting to get really some widespread adoption. Another choice would have been a hardcore Unix system. You know, back at that time, you could, you know, buy a Sun Microsystems system, very expensive, but server class, you know, kind of multi-threaded architecture that lets you do a lot of things at once and all this cool stuff. But as it turns out, that's what Apple did with their, you know, with their Mac OS operating system. Is they said, hey, you know what, with OS X, we're going to go and we're just going to take Unix, you know, at the base of it, and we're going to kind of build it around a variant of Unix. And so we were able to look at the Apple platform at the time, and this, like I said, 10 years ago, is well before the iPhone or the iPad or even the iPod at that point was, you know, I don't even, was just barely out, was really what kind of set that in stone for us was, hey, there's this great server class architecture that is being used for some really serious applications. People are using it for servers. Obviously, at the time, desktop publishing, multimedia, movie editing, you know, it was all done on Macs.
Mm-hmm.
But also a number of our founders said, hey, you know what? Also, all my kids want is this thing. I don't even know what it is. It's an iPod or a pod thingy or, you know, it was brand new at the time. You know, I'm talking the iPod Classic.
Right.
And really the design aesthetic and the thought put into the whole package that Apple had really kind of set that for us. So, yeah, so we, you know, we use that as the basis for leverage to say, hey, we're going to build our platform on top of Mac OS X and really make it so that it's, you know, Unix-based underneath so that, you know, later we can say, hey, you know what, this is actually portable because of, you know, what goes on underneath there. It wouldn't be that big of a lift to send it to different operating systems, which is what we've done since. Because, you know, the Mac Mini is great for a number of things, but, you know, it sets a price point that you can't really get below for a system. And, you know, it's for a ginormous, let's say, house with, you know, 30, 40, 50 rooms, there's plenty of processing power in that Mac Mini. It can handle the whole thing. But at the same time, well, gee, I just want one room. I just have a condo in New York, and the price point of starting at that Mac Mini price, you know, it's great if you can do it. But hey, I don't need all that horsepower, right? Why? Well, right. I don't need to haul my boat to work every day, so I'm not going to get a, you know, giant 4x4 truck. I'm going to get something else. And so that's, you know, kind of the way we looked at it, to say, hey, we can take the same exact architecture and put it on another platform, a less expensive platform, just as robust, you know, Linux-based, Unix-based, and go from there. But yeah, Apple really did, you know, I can't discount the great things that we got, you know, from as a corporation, from, you know, I don't want to say riding Apple's coattails, but, you know, Apple's had a meteoric rise over the past 10 years that we've been, you know, more than happy to you know, have made that choice those 10 years ago.
Yeah, I would say, like, that was one of the reasons that, or one of the most specific reasons, was when I spoke, I did a lot of meetings with architects and talked about designs and automation, even, you know 7-10 years ago, that some people were already doing it and they were already kind of hip to what automation was, and, you know, and the ones that weren't doing it, and some still aren't, you know, because this fear of automation, it was kind of tough to sell anything that wasn't Apple based, and that was the word. It was like, oh, all our clients are Apple families, and we would only specify, this coming from an architect, something that's Apple based because it just works, and, you know, that's what they live with already. Everyone has one nowadays. You know, it's this new thing, and it's really cool, and it's really easy to use, user friendly. And I want that same concept, that design, that packaging, and overall user experience in this system experience, home automation system that I'm going to put in someone's home. And that's kind of really what was going on for years and years and years. And now more, you know, more of the designers and architects are kind of catching on to automation and things like that. And I'm kind of getting less and less people being resistant to it, I guess. But a lot of it, I think, was kind of like, it made it easier. Apple, I think, made it easier to kind of be accepted, because, like, oh, well, I have this cool iPhone. Like, I could just assume that if it's, you know, coming from the same area, that I'm going to get that same sort of experience. And that's what I want that.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, people do, you know, really look at, you know, take the iPhone for, you know, for example, or I've even got, you know, actually it's around here somewhere. I have one of the first generation iPod Touches. That really can't run much anymore. I think it's on iOS 3. That's as far as it goes. But it still works great for playing music and doing all the things it did at the time.
It plays music too?
It's amazing. I know. You can play games, and I hear you can almost make phone calls on some of these devices now. But
yeah, I just want the phone app. That's all I want. I just want it to make phone calls.
It's the you know, I have a Motorola Razr flip phone around here too. That
I keep those in a drawer next to my two Betamax.
Yeah, you can't
tapes.
Get rid of it, right?
Yeah, it's gonna come back. It's gonna come back.
You never know. Yeah. But no, it is. It's that experience that people want. That, you know, hey, this is actually, it's easy because I didn't have to do anything. I mean, let's face it. I call myself I'm a card carrying nerd. I love getting underneath the covers, getting underneath the hood of stuff, you know, kind of tinkering. I love kind of fiddling. Back in the day, as I was a kid, I used to, you know, use you know, DOS to run games.
Nice.
You had to get in. Like, you had to go into the autoexec.bat file, and you had to adjust memory settings and shared memory. And, like, if you wanted to play that one game, you might be spending a couple hours of you know, nerd time, you know, doing that. And I actually, as a person, I enjoy that. Well, you know, it turns out that I'm kind of in the minority.
People don't have the attention span for that anymore.
No, I don't think they do. And I'm starting to lose it myself. But that's the great thing about, you know, what the iPhone did and what Apple did, was it's like, hey, this is easy. You want to download an app, just click on it, and right. Boom. there it is, and it's ready to go, and it just happens, and you didn't have to fiddle with any of it. And that's really what, you know, from a home automation and, you know, business control and automation perspective is where the world is kind of finally starting to catch up to that. Hey, we don't want that anymore. We don't want that, you know, have to take that time to fiddle with this. I just want something that works really quickly and easily. And you know, you're seeing more and more of that, but yeah, Apple did really kind of lead the charge there, especially with the iPhone. And then with the iPad as well, that was a huge, you know, development. I believe it was 6 years ago, 5 years ago, when the first iPad came out.
The original iPad, something like that.
Yeah. So it doesn't. It's funny because when you think about it, it's not that long ago. But you know, today it's kind of ubiquitous that that people have those devices.
And it's not even the first like tablet that I've seen implemented in the field for controls and stuff. I'm up here in Northern California in wine country. And before the iPad, we had implemented stuff, and it's a very clunky commercial tablet kind of interface for crush controls and things like that in wineries. So industrial grade automation, but not home automation. So when Apple came out with this, you know, same user experience on a tablet, you know, it wasn't the first tablet, but it was the first tablet that it was like, you know, this really nice and design thought driven and like easy to use. It just made it better and more desirable. And it just overall, the same thing with the automation. You know, I just want to push this one thing and it's going to do what I want it to do. I don't have to, you know, really get into it and really nerd out like the people who like to, oh, you know, tweak with everything and do all these things. Just push the one button and it does what you want it to do.
Yeah, no, it's true. And that, you know, the iPad really took that, you know, and put it all together. And a lot of people kind of, you know, when Apple was going to come out with its mysterious, you know, tablet, it was almost a joke at first. You know, people said, "Oh, the Newton." Remember the Newton?
The Newton.
That was way ahead of its time. And you know, I always had a you know, Palm Pilot. I guess I'm dating myself. I'm not that old, but
you are because you sit on air. You can't take it back.
I guess I am, seriously. But yeah, when I was younger, I loved the Palm Pilot. I could play games on it and take notes, and you could, you know, you had to write your, you get a little stylus that you could, you know, you had to draw the letters with, and you know, it was really that, you know, it was a good concept, and you know, the idea was right that people did want something, some digital item in their pocket that could do all these cool things, but it was just too hard. And until Apple came up with, you know, really the iPhone kind of kicked it off. That, you know, really from a smartphone perspective, to not have a keyboard or a number pad on your phone was a kind of a radical idea that I never thought I would want. I what do you mean there's no number pad? How do you dial? You know, there's only 2-3 buttons on it. I don't get it. How do I hit talk? And then, but then once you use it, you're like, oh, wow. Yeah, they got this almost exactly right. Yeah. And it only could work like that, right? It had to be spot on. If there were too many buttons or too many things,
it wouldn't work. Yeah,
no,
wouldn't
it's pick up.
Yeah, and so like the one button, well, power button and the main button, the kind of one that I refer to as the only button, even though there's more than one, it just does everything, and it's so simple.
Yeah, it does. That's it. And you always know, hey, if I want to start something or do something different, I just hit that one button, and I go right back to it.
Right.
And it did. It obviously it caught on, and like you said, it wasn't the first. But you know, we made a choice at Savant to say, you know, the day the iPad came out was the day we discontinued our line of custom touch panels, because we could see, you know, kind of the writing on the wall that, hey, you know, I've got a choice between spending a lot of money on a custom touch panel that does one thing. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I can get this great, amazing tablet at a much lower price that does so many other things, and I can still put this one in the wall, right? You can get a dock for it, and, mm-hmm. and you know, if you want it in wall, you can do that. You can even lock it down so it only does one thing if that's what you want it to do. But, you know, we really said, hey, you know, people aren't going to want that experience, like you said, where, you know, it's a like those industrial, you know, winery, you know, controllers. It's great at doing what it does, but
all it does.
Yeah, you're not going to take it home with you and sit in bed with it and surf the internet.
Right.
You know, we really said, hey, you know, at this, from a business perspective, it doesn't make a lot of sense to be pushing this aspect of it. Those, you know, we called it proprietary glass.
right.
Touch panels versus saying, hey, we're going to use what people really want, the device that's in their pocket, the device that you know you can put on a stand, that they can carry around, that can check the weather and download apps and play games and video chat with friends. And yeah, oh, by the way, it can also control your home too. And it's, you know, it's really, you know, that was, like I said, 5 or 6 years ago. Obviously, you know, the premise has been borne out, especially with the number of, you know, automation and control companies you see popping up on Kickstarter and Indiegogo. And
you can get lost there.
It is. It's amazing. All the different options. But yeah.
Yeah. Apple's iPad, their original one, honestly, that really, I think, launched home automation forward quite a bit. And it really started to push out the proprietary glass that you're talking about. It was like you have the choice. You could spend a couple $1,000s on, you know, a dedicated panel that is only going to ever do this, and it's great when it does just that. But you could also spend a fraction and use this other one that, again, has this experience and that everyone is using, and it's so easy, and it also does all this other great stuff.
Yeah.
And so then that was the choice. And then, again, you know, Savant, you know, kind of being hip to all that stuff, just, you know, that's the way the system's working. We should kind of just stick with that. But that's only on the panel side. You guys have dedicated remotes as well, though, correct?
Oh, sure. Yep. We've had remotes. We have, you know, on-screen display technology, all that kind of stuff, you know, is you know, still pretty popular. People still want to, you know, we had a lot of debates on this and said, hey, is this, you know, this phone thing and the iPad thing, is it going to do away with the remote? And whereas, you know, if you're going to be doing a phone call, you can make your phone call on the keypad on the touchscreen. You know, there's still some people who, and, you know, there's a lot of them out there, that they just want physical buttons when they're watching TV. You want to be able to, because you're not looking at it. You know what I mean? You want to be looking up.
You want the tactile button. Just, you know, you've memorized the classic, you know, arrows, the enter key things. I'm one of those people. I really dig that I don't have to, like, stare at my phone. I can just, like, grab it, look at the screen, and know, you know, this is enter, skip, etc. It's the feel of that tactile button. If not that, you know, having that remote that everyone has, I can guarantee, in their pocket right now, can't do the same thing. It's just that you can't feel the physical button. You physically need to turn it on and go look at it.
No, it's true. And sometimes I, you know, I make this little mental debate to myself sitting on the couch. I'm like, okay, I've got my phone in my pocket, but the remote's over there on the coffee table, which is, do I want to pull my phone out or do I want to reach for the remote? And I kind of do that mental calculation of which is going to take a second more potentially to do.
The app on the tablet or on the phone, the smartphone application, I think is 1,000 times cooler than just a classic remote. But just something about that, like I said, you know, a handheld remote that's, you know, got the tactile buttons. But also, unless it's been discontinued, because I've been out of the loop a little bit, you guys have one that incorporates like an iPod Touch or something, correct, in the tactile remote?
Correct, we do, and it was, unfortunately, it was just discontinued.
No!
Yeah.
As I'm saying, I'm like, oh, this is going to be bad. This is going to be bad.
No, it's okay. It was very, very popular at the time. You know, and again, it was really before the leverage was available. And again, we try and take technologies and say, hey, you know what? If we're going to reinvent the wheel, it has to be worth reinventing, right? There's got to be some really significant benefit to it versus saying, hey, we're just going to do it ourselves because we can maybe make a couple more bucks per device.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're going to kind of do the software, you know, we'll write it ourselves, but, you know, maybe not, you know, put as much time into it as we could have to save a couple bucks. No, instead we say, hey, you know what? How could we leverage what's out there? And so one of the first ways we did that was said, hey, let's take that iPod Touch, which was, again, out before even the iPhone, and let's pair it up with a remote, right? Slip it right in there. We've got a, you know, it's got a, it comes as a unit, right? It's, you know, pretty easy to disassemble. There's only like two screws that can cause it to come apart if you want to, you know, take the iPod off for whatever reason. But we made it so that it wasn't, you know, removable device. But yeah, the iPod on the top was for your, and still is for all the people that have them. I, you know, have one at my house that I still enjoy. For metadata type, you know, functions like, hey, I want to search my, you know, 30,000 songs I've got on my media server.
All legally downloaded.
Yeah, of course, obviously. Actually, yeah, true. Yeah, of course. And I want to look at my security cameras, right? You know, things that you really want to do on an interface with the screen large enough, with the you know, video resolution that you really want. But at the same time, had tactile buttons for it as well.
It was kind of the best of both.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, it was great for a time. You know, Apple discontinued that version of the iPod. And, you know, we kind of looked at it and said, hey, do we do that again? Do we go back and say, hey, let's do that again with the, you know, next generation iPod and try and play that game where, you know, every time Apple discontinues one, we've got to have thousands of them on hand.
Remade,
or, you know.
New pin interface.
Exactly.
It doesn't go to iOS 9.
That's it.
I think that you guys should reinvent it with, like, the BlackBerry. But before you guys do that, I want to thank my sponsor again, Ingram Micro. They are the world's largest technology distributor delivering flexible multi-chain supply solutions and more. Head over to ingrammicro.com. Check out all their solutions they have to offer for you as an integrator. Yeah, BlackBerry. Someone needs to reinvent those guys. Seriously.
Well, they just came out with a new phone, and I heard they sold out of it the week it was released.
All two of them?
It was three, I think.
I'm just kidding, BlackBerry. You can be on my show.
And what did they say? 200,000 they sold out of very quickly?
I only saw part of it. It looked like a bigger BlackBerry. Wider buttons and screen. I'm curious to see how that works. So I have to ask, because are you guys going to make a BlackBerry yet?
We probably won't.
Windows in the
near future.
Okay.
We are looking at it. Yeah, it's a
possibility.
It's one of those things where you got to say, hey, let's, you know, how do we meet the vast majority of what the market is looking for?
Is there a big enough user base for it?
That's exactly it.
Does it make sense?
Yep. And so we've got to choose that. And that was one of the reasons why we said, hey, you know what, making this new iPod remote, you know, it's really cool, but at the same time, Android has kind of, you know, really spiked with the user base and the ability to kind of do what Apple wouldn't allow, which was, hey, you can now, from scratch, embed Android in whatever device you want.
Right.
And obviously, iOS, you know, Apple likes to, they control that, and good for them. They provide a great experience,
yeah.
And that's, you know, their claim to fame. But at the same time, if you want to do something, you know, from scratch, you know, you can get the Android OS, you can get a screen, you can get a processor, you can put it in your own design and write your own software for it on top of Android, just like with iOS, but you can do it on your own hardware.
You can do the nerd, you know, digging in thing that we talked about. You know, they could really tweak with it if you really wanted to.
Exactly. And so we took that and we made a new remote. It's called the Savant Universal Remote.
Hey.
We call it a self-configuring remote because, it again, with that magic blueprint software, once you've laid out the whole system, you don't need to program the remote. You just get the remote on your Wi-Fi network, and it automatically downloads all the info from your Wi-Fi network about your house. So if you drop it, or your, you know, toddler thought, you know, it looked kind of like a boat and decided to take it in the bathtub, or, you know, we all hear about these things that happen at customers got thrown in the pool during a party or whatever.
Yeah, and then I get that phone call, oh, it never worked. I'm like, why is it smashed in 50 pieces? Like, well, I don't know, that's how it came.
And why is it dripping water out of the corner of
exactly.
it?
Exactly, yeah, same I've thing. Gotten those calls.
But no, you just throw it on your Wi-Fi network and boom, it just, you know, it just gets everything about the configuration. It can do everything that the last remote could do automatically. All your favorites, all your stuff is still there. And so, yeah, that's our you know, newest remote. And, you know, we're looking at doing more of that in the future.
Yeah, I dig the remotes. And another, okay, so you guys, you make a lot of the hardware. You make some switches, correct? And do you make your own switches?
We do, absolutely.
Okay, yep. Make your own switches. And one of the last cool things I've seen, well, this is a few years ago, so I'm dating myself in home automation and Savant, is the your switching capability. You're kind of like pinch to zoom for multiple feeds of video. Your scaler. It's one of the coolest things I had seen in the last 2 years.
We call it Smart View Tiling. And it kind of marries, you know, obviously the matrix switching technology is a, you know, mainstay in AV installations, right? Over a certain size of home, people want to be able to watch the same thing in multiple rooms. But you've also, you know, there's the flip side of it where people want to be able to, you know, instead of watching one thing in multiple rooms, they want to watch multiple things in one room. Mm. And the advent and the installation and the popularity of larger, you know, TV sizes has really made that possible on one television versus, you know, maybe, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, what was more popular was putting a matrix of TVs on the wall, right? I'd put 4 TVs or 6 TVs or 9 TVs all, you know, stacked together, and I got to make sure they line up, and I got to get all the mounts perfect, because if you don't, you're going to have a gap, and the customer's not going to be happy. And
never is.
It's hard, right? It really is. Mechanically, it's hard to get those things to line up. But, you know, suddenly now you see 80-inch TVs, the price comes way down, you know, 70-inch TVs is kind of the new, almost the new standard.
Right.
For a good-sized TV, and you know, 100 inches aren't, you know, that expensive as they used to be. Obviously, you know, you need a crane to get them in some places, depending on, you know, where you live. If you live in a high rise, it's going to be hard getting that 100-inch TV in the elevator up the stairs. But yeah. So what we did was we said, hey, you know what? Let's take our, you know, video processor and scaling technology that we have, and we've had it for years, and let's take that and basically pass all the video through those video processors you can get in our switch, which other people had done, you know, similar technologies. But we said, let's take it to the next level and make the super simple, ultimate, easy-to-use interface where, you know, if you're watching 6 TVs, you know, 6 shows at a time on 1 TV, the layout that's on the TV matches exactly what you see on the iPad. And if you want to make one go bigger, you just double tap it or you pinch and zoom it to get it, you know, big, and it goes to either, you know, larger, you know, if it was, let's say 9 TVs, you know, 9 viewing areas, you know, you make one go bigger to replace 4 with a larger one, or you, you know, zoom it out even more, double tap it again, and it goes full screen. Double tap it again, it goes back. And, you know, really the cool part of it, though, that is the tricky part from, you know, our technology perspective, but makes it so easy for users, is when you want to listen to something else, like you're, you know, so you got this great technology and you've got 6 different, you know, shows in front of you. Maybe you're, you know, a business person and you're watching CNBC and you're watching Fox News and you're watching CNN and, you know, you're watching your stock tickers, and maybe you got a sporting event over on the side because, you know, you do like to, you know, maybe get distracted every once in a while. And suddenly something happens on one of those displays. What do? Do you have to make it zoom? Do you want to just listen to it? And basically we put an icon on the UI for the audio. It's a little, you know, your traditional kind of, you know, what you see on your computer for turning your volume up looks just like that. And you just press and hold it with your finger and you drag it to any one of the displays and drop it. And suddenly you're listening to that particular display, that particular source, which, you know, really has traditionally been very hard to ever program or set up with any other system. With Savant, you just, you know, you got to buy the equipment, which again is, you know, at the higher end of the, you know, I think it starts at about $7,000 for the 4 display and can go up to, you know, $30,000 MSRP for the 9 display, depending on, you know, your size and your inputs that you want to go with it. You can, you know, very quickly and easily be able to, you know, route all that stuff around. And from an integrator perspective, you know, it's a couple checkboxes in Blueprint to set that up.
I think if you're buying 100-inch TVs, it's the cost of the switch isn't really that bad. But the best part is that,
correct,
that you can just make it happen. You don't have to charge bill up for multiple hours. You just make it happen, and it works in tradition or to in continuing the Apple tradition. Making it work seamlessly and easy for the end user or the homeowner or whoever has this control. Okay, just tap that. Now I want audio and then volume up within just a few taps, very minimal, and it happens like on the fly.
Yeah, and that's, you know, at the end of the day, that's really what it's all about is, you know, from an integration, you know, perspective, to be able to give your customer something that's easy, something that's simple, and that's going to make them say, hey, you know what? When your friends come over for a party or you're having a business meeting in your conference room and other people see the system and they ask, hey, what is that? How do I get that? You say, oh, you got to call my guy. You got to call my company that I use because they're awesome. They set this thing up. It works every time. It's really super simple. You know, because that's really, again, what it's all about is those happy customers and those referrals that drive more business, right?
Right. Yeah. It's all the referrals and the word of mouth is always the best case scenario. And I think ideally with automation, like if it works right and it's simple and easy to use, you're going to get that. It's going to get set up, and then homeowner, whoever who has this in their home or business, the first they're going to do is they're going to want to show it off. And you're going to party or something like that, invite people over, you know, look how cool this is, or this can do, what this can do, how easily, and that kind of just gets people to go, okay, well, now how do I get that where I am or live or work?
And yeah, that's true.
It's a great sharing, you know, application, and people, I think they just spread the word. It's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Now, in the last few weeks, Savant, you guys, the company, has quite a bit some news going on from leadership and some new people, right?
Sure. Yeah, a lot going on. We have a new CEO. Like I said, our not really former, but I guess it is former CEO, Robert Madonna. He is now chairman of the board. And we have a gentleman, his name is William Lynch, who is our new CEO. He was formerly CEO of Barnes & Noble. You know, great guy to work with. You know, I've had some experience with him so far. He's extremely passionate, very into technology, and, you know, really excited about, you know, smart home technology. Again, like a lot of people, you know, it had, you know, various experiences with various other smart home systems before, you know, starting at Savant. And so he was able to kind of jump right in with that firsthand knowledge of, hey, you know, I've had some of this stuff and it's cool, but sometimes it's hard, sometimes it's tricky, sometimes I needed somebody to come back and install it multiple times, and, you know, really to just that ease of use is key. And so he was able to really jump right in, you know, at a number of levels at the company, and he's really been doing a great job.
You've also had quite a bit of investment happening in the last few weeks as well.
Yeah, we had a investment announcement that came out. A company, a private equity firm, KKR, put a investment into Savant, which again has been you know, really great. It's you know, in addition to KKR, Robert Madonna also put more investment into the company. Again, as one of our founders and as chairman of the board. It's you know, really been the type of thing where the excitement in the smart home and home automation space, you know, from a business perspective, is really starting to become apparent. There's a lot of research reports out there that show, you know, gee, the Internet of Things is the next big thing, right? It's the next.
There's that word, the Internet of Things.
That's it.
That comes up really quick.
Everyone wants their things.
That happens all the time. The Internet of Things. It's internet connected, Ethernet. We've been doing this for years, though, in our industry. I mean, and I know automation audio, we're such a kind of a tight little knit community. I say we're bigger than we are, and everyone kind of says, oh, you guys are just kind of this little small splash and, you know, in the pond. I'm like, eh. But you guys are now reinvent, or not you specifically, but the Internet of Things people just want to not, or I don't know, they just love that word, and I don't know how I feel about it just yet.
No, it is. And you know what, honestly, it's kind of what we were talking about earlier has really caused that explosion. It's the proliferation of smartphones and tablets, because once you have that, and again, I mean, it's hard to find someone that doesn't these days,
right,
that doesn't have a smartphone or doesn't have at least one tablet of, you know, some size.
Correct.
It's kind of like the window to the world. It enables you to do all these things. So I think what in the past was, you know, hey, like you said, we've been doing this for years because we have, but that buy-in was pretty high,
mm-hmm.
and the adoption was almost, not really hard, but there was some convincing for some homeowners, some business owners to say, okay, well, I'm going to put this screen on your table, and it's a touch screen, and you're going to touch it, and it's going to do some stuff. Well, that was not really a foreign concept, but it was a little bit. People were like, oh, okay, that's kind of neat. But now, like I said, everybody has it in their pocket. And once you have it, once you're used to it, and, you know, once you're, like, people sleep with their phones, you know, they don't want to give it up. It's really kind of spawned that, you know, that Internet of Things explosion now, where everyone's like, oh, wow, the interface to all these devices is now in everyone's hand.
Right.
Let's, we got to get on the other end of that. We got to have our device be able to, you know, turn your stove on from your phone, or, you know, see what your refrigerator temperature is from your phone, or do your thermostat or your lights or, you know, whatever it is. People now are wanting that because they have that window in their pocket already.
Right.
Which is driving that quite a bit. But yeah, the Internet of Things, it's a pretty generic term.
Right. It is, but everyone knows what it, I mean, for the most part, it's very common. It's almost as common as the device that everyone has in their pocket currently.
Yeah, no, it's true. But it has, it's caused a lot of excitement. And, you know, that was, again, back to the KKR investment. There's a lot of business leaders who are now saying, hey, you know, I get it. I've got this in my home. And it's going to be the type of thing where everyone's going to want this in their home. And what was kind of like you said, the industry, the AV industry and the, you know, CDA industry and custom installation industry, you know, was a little niche for a while. It was expensive. You needed a lot of money to really do anything of significance, or you wanted to be a technology pioneer. You know, the new technologies that are enabling this are now making it so that really anybody can have it. And it's kind of like, you know, if you want to go back to an analogy, you know, I don't know, this isn't obviously an exact analogy, but, you know, you go back a couple, go back 100 years or 150 years where automobiles were the purview of the very wealthy. You needed specialized people to, you know, take care of it for you. And, you know, for, you know, a good number of years, it was kind of a niche thing. Well, now, you know, who doesn't have a car, travel in a car almost every day, right?
Right.
Another technology too is, you know, you think about the length of time people have had this is not as long as we think of, is indoor plumbing. 100 years ago, 150 years ago, going outside in the snow to go to the bathroom was not unheard of. Going out to the well to get water every day instead of being able to just run the faucet was a normal thing for people. And that new technology in their homes, until it was really kind of easy to use and simple and rock solid, people were kind of nervous about it for a while. And once you get to that point, it's kind of like you think of running water today. Oh my God, can you imagine what it would be like to live in your home without running water? It'd be hard. And it's kind of the same thing where once people have that experience, they've really got a good, you know, home automation or smart home system that they say, hey, you know what, I can just hit one button and all my lights go on, or, you know, everything gets set up to the way I want it, or, you know, I'm leaving the house and I don't have to wander around and make sure that my kids turn the lights off or didn't set the thermostat right or left the TV on. I could just hit one button. Once you kind of have that peace of mind and then you go away from it, you realize what you've lost. But it's almost like until you have that and you have that experience with it and you do it a lot, that you don't realize it, you know what I mean, until you've lived with it and you realize the benefits of it.
Right, and now with automation, there's all these choices, and now automation is becoming more common. And, you know, I always show people around where I work, you know, this is one level of automation. It's kind of extravagant for some people. It may not be enough for others, and you don't need to do that. You can do some level of that. And using your kind of car analogy, you know, if cars is automation for a home, you know, do you want a Prius or do you want a Tesla, or,
sure,
or something like that, you know, and, yeah, or anything in between, or something, you know, way off of this side, or, you know, luxurious or practical.
There's many, you know, large cities in the world where scooters and small motorcycles are, you know, are much more attractive forms of transportation than a
right.
car,
right?
Right? It's, you know, it's price point, it's convenience, it's size, it's scale. And yeah, the you know, automation industry kind of fits that same thing depending on where you live. You could do, you know, one light switch where you just want to do your outside porch. Or again, you can do, you know, a typical American home that might have, you know, 8 rooms total. You might want to deck out every single room with every single possible technology. I want in-wall speakers everywhere, and I want all my light switches, and I want all my thermostats, and I want a gas fireplace that I can turn on at the touch of a button, and okay, I want all my shades, and I want my windows and my doors and my front gate, and I want an intercom, and
everything.
Gee, I'm going to put in a hot tub. And
right,
you know, the sky's the limit on what you want to spend there and what you want to do. And it all, again, like you said, it all depends on what you want.
Yeah, and if you can control it, someone can control it.
That's it. Yep. And even if you can't, we probably have a technology to let you do it. So power-based or whatnot.
Or something that's part of the whole category of the Internet of Things, if you will. And then we'll control it that way.
Sure.
One of the last things I want to touch on is that you guys, one of the last one of your apps, I think it's changed.
Yes.
One of the cool, and that's what I want to touch on, is the change of it. But before it changed, and I'm not, because I don't know what the new one looks like, but the last one I saw was so cool because nobody was doing this. Right, so I mean, you typically with an in-wall touch panel, or whether that's, you know, the new proprietary or not new, but you know, your proprietary panels, or it lives on an iPad or tablet. What it was is a picture of each room. So, like, if I'm controlling my bedroom, it's a picture of the bedroom. Okay, kind of cool. But then when you go touch the lamp turns on in the image. The lights turn on in your room. You know, you tap the TV turns on, things like that. It's like a real pick image of what's actually going on. So that couldn't be any more simple of what you see is what it does. And, you know, I had to code stuff like that. You know, I draw up, you know, hours in like Photoshop to create an image of this cool TV or the satellite box that didn't exist. And it was kind of just a little graphic that just floated on the screen, and eventually it could get cluttered and you had to like design. What's easier than an image of what you're looking at?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we call that True Image. It's one of our, you know, many patented technologies that that we have. And yeah, like you said, it's great. You get an actual picture of the room. You know, you take a photo or multiple photos of that room, but you really only have to take one photo per thing that changes. Really, it's the lights. So if you had, you know, four lights in a room. You would take five photos of that room, one with each of those, you know, on a tripod, one of each of those four lights on, and then all of them off. And then in the software, we stitch all that together and say, hey, you know what? When all those lights are on, we're going to show you the brightest parts of all four of those photos. When one of those lights is off, we know which photo it was. We're gonna you know, take that one and really hide it behind the others. I'm making it sound simple. It's not behind the scenes.
But it works like that.
Incredibly complicated, but it works like that. Yeah, you want the TV to turn on, you touch the TV, and you know, you get the menu for that.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's available right now. You know, again, you do need you know, fairly professional photographer to take those photos, and you know, then, you know, obviously there's integration aspect that, you know, it's not like you said, not as much time as it took in the past. But you know, it'll take you a couple hours to set that up. But you know, it's pretty cool.
All worth it.
Yeah, exactly. Well worth it. But no, we have a new app that's coming out that we just launched at CEDIA called the Savant app. That you know, works with our, you know, entire you know, both of our, you know, we talked about some of the hosts earlier. Both of our brains. We have one that's called a smart host that's Linux based, lower cost than the, you know, and slightly not less features, but it just can't do quite as many rooms of stuff. It goes up to about 12 full rooms of stuff that you could do with the smart host.
Okay. And you may, you know, only need that maximum. You may not even need all of that.
That's it. Yeah, it does, you know, up to, I think it's, you know, 100 light switches or 6 thermostats, or, you know, really about, you know, 80% of the traditional American homes, what
sure.
It can do. The app works with that as well as our Pro Host, which is that Mac Mini, which is the sky's the limit. You know, we do 50, 70 room mansions, castles, you know, whatever you want. But this new app is kind of to take advantage of the really the difference in the way people are starting to expect home automation. You know, to be able to say, hey, you know what, instead of saying I want to control that individual thing, which is really cool from that True Image perspective, but now it's like, hey, I want my home to do something in general. I want to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to set up my home exactly the way I want it. Say you're having a party, and this is one of the great claims to fame of the new Savant app, is the ability to what we call capture a scene. I can say, hey, I'm going to set up my house just like I wanted, or, you know, maybe I did it already. I'm having the party, and my friends adjusted the volume in each room just the way they want it, and some people are watching the football game, and you know, the people in the kitchen have the lights just right, and they're playing some, you know, Pandora station, and you know, maybe the lights in the patio are just right, and everything's just the way I like it. The shades are at the right level. You can hit a button and just say, "Hey, I want to capture this," and it lets you create a scene to recall later that just automatically takes everything that's going on in your home right then and there, and let you take a snapshot of it. And then later, when you want that again, it's Friday night again, you're coming home, your friends are coming over, you just, bam, hit that one button, and boom, everything goes exactly back to the way it was. You can tweak it, you can edit it, you can say, hey, you know what, I really wish I had added that one thing, the patio lights weren't on just right, or, you know, I wanted to change the TV station or whatever it was. You can obviously go in and edit those, you can create them from scratch, but really that ability to have the end user change their own, what we call scenes, to set their house up just the way they want it and recall it with a touch of a button is really kind of the way people have started to move to the way they want to, what is kind of the promise of automation, right? The promise of a smart home isn't that, well, I've got 20 apps on my phone and I got to remember, I want to adjust the lights, I got to go to this app, or I want to adjust the thermostat, I got to go to that app. It's no, I just want to say, hey, I'm going to bed. And bed, right. Going to bed means, you know, the lights in the kitchen and the downstairs dimmed to 50% for 5 minutes, and then they shut off because I want to be able to walk upstairs. And then the bathroom light maybe stays on for 10 minutes. Maybe the TV goes on a sleep timer for 15 minutes, whatever, however you like to live. And then maybe, you know, you say, hey, I want to wake up the next morning. I've got my wake up scene where the shades are going to come up and the lights are going to come on slow and the music's going to come on low. I can set that to say, hey, you know what? I want to wake up 15 minutes before sunrise. We've got a built-in, you know, celestial clock in the system. So you don't have to say, hey, I want to wake up at what sunrise again? It's 6:57 tomorrow. No, you just say, hey, I want to wake up 10 minutes before sunrise, and boom, all that stuff just happens automatically. So, you know, really the new Savant app, and again, it's not out yet. It's coming out November 10th. So, you know, if you've got a Savant system or you've been thinking about getting a Savant system, now's the time to do it. It really kind of brings that user experience to the entirely other level. It includes that image, you know, some of that image functionality you talked about. It doesn't have the button, you know, press on that light and it turns the light on. But in the app to, you know, really, again, to let the homeowner or the business owner who's using this system to be able to say, you know, hey, I don't want to look at a floor plan of my house or a list of buttons or a list of rooms. I want to control the living room. Oh, there it is. There's a photo of my living room right there to represent the living room. And all you have to do is take those photos yourself with the app because you've got the camera, right? It's in – when was the last time you saw a smartphone or a tablet without a camera, right? They all have it.
My flip phone doesn't have one.
It probably does, though. Even those, a lot of those flip phones.
A lot of them have it, yeah.
Had a half a megapixel camera. It looks like it, you know.
And it was great at the time.
It's like you took a, what'd you take that picture with a potato is the joke I think that people use, right? But no, you can take a photo yourself of that room. So what we've done is we've, you know, said, hey, we're going to take this concept to the next level where, you know, your systems integrator, that professional, is the one that's saying, hey, you know what? Here's how we're going to install this in your home. Here's how we're going to lay it out. Here's how we're going to make it all perfect for you. But then when you want to change it, when you want to tweak something, you know, to have to call your integrator and then the integrator says, well, yeah, I can do it. I got to roll a truck and send a guy out and, you know, I got to charge you $150. And just to be honest, you know, I'm not making any money on that $150 because I got to pay the guy so much and I got his insurance and I got to pay for the truck and, you know, I got to pull him off another job that technically I'm losing money off of this to do this for you, but you're my best customer, so I want to do it for you. He'll be on his way over tomorrow. That part of that goes away. That the whole, you can say, hey, you know what? Yeah, just hit plus and capture the scene and you're good to go. Now, there's a lot of customers who still don't want to do it, right? Like, you know, like we had the remote analogy earlier. There's a lot of people who aren't like me or like you, Johnny, that don't necessarily, they don't want to do it themselves, right? They work hard all day and they don't want to play with the technology. They just want to hit that button when they go to bed, right? And have somebody set it all up for them. That's still totally available, as you know, from an integrator perspective, as a white glove service. You can set all that up for them and charge them whatever is appropriate, right? Or they can do it themselves.
But the fact that you're giving them the choice to do themselves, I think, is a huge key thing for Savant. I'm not familiar if other people are already doing this. They might be kind of inching their way towards that, but that's one of the things that I get, you know, hey, did so-and-so, you know, pull their head out of their ass and, you know, give the homeowner the ability to program the systems themselves.
Sure.
And almost 90% of the time, it's like, no, because it's always been like handwritten code and all that stuff. And like, I could probably teach you if you have a long time to like pay me to not work and, you know, do all this stuff. And even exactly. still, you're after doing it all, you're probably going to mess something up. And then I have to, like I said, roll a truck. I got to come back. I got to do all this stuff and, yeah. you know, put everything back the just the way it was to get you to add that one thing you wanted to do that wasn't as easy as you thought.
Yeah. And when you have to charge people for that, it's a customer service issue. Do they understand that, you know, that you're really charging them the equivalent of what it cost you? Maybe, maybe not. At the same time, it's never a profit center. You want to get that instead. You want to have that person say when their friends are over, hey, check this out. Look at this thing I did. I hit this one button and it does all this stuff. And oh, you want to change it here? I'll show you how to change it. And then the person says, wow, where'd you get that? And they say, oh, you got to call. You know, my people, they'll hook you up.
Yeah. And, but again, though, it's not really blowing my mind, but like, it's to the point. I'm like, I can't believe that everyone isn't to this point, like where they're giving the homeowner the option to do that. And it's not just because, you know, you got to write code and all that stuff, but the fact that you're doing that is really kind of setting you apart from others to, you know, look how easy it is to use and all that stuff. And, you know, hey, I call Johnny up. I want to add this. I'm like, oh, cool. Yeah, you can just go to the panel or your pad and just do it yourself. Not to sound rude, like, but it's easy. You just go, you know, tap this, do this, and you're good. And you don't. I don't need to charge you, you know, $150 an hour to do that one thing. You can just do it and not have to call me to come out to charge you to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because nobody wants to pay extra. It should just work. And that's like you said, you know, home automation. It's like one of the coolest things in the home. And it's the Internet of Things, your house does all this stuff, and it's so cool. And, you know, the Jetsons was really, I think, is one of the biggest things that comes to mind.
Right, yeah.
You know, if you watch the Jetsons, George comes to work, he flies in his flying car, puts in his little thing, and when he hops on his little escalator or mobile escalator into work, he's holding, I swear, what looks like an iPad, a tablet of some sort.
It's true.
He's just reading this little thing, and then, you know, Rosie the robot's like the one thing we don't have, but there are some things out there named that and more of that, but
they say yet we don't have that.
Some of you guys probably don't have that yet, but I don't want to talk about that. That's another show. You're giving them the choice to do that, and that's great. It's because, you know, the hard sell is like, oh yeah, now I got to charge you because you want to do that. They don't want to pay it again. They've already paid you for a system, so the fact that, you know, you to add something. And get the choice, make it easy, is awesome. You know, again, yeah. You know, there's some people that don't want to do that, and that's not a problem, you know. But, you know, it's made it easy for me to just go, okay, I change it really quick, there you go, no big deal.
Yeah, that's it. And if they don't want to do it, then you can do it for them, you can charge them, right? There's, like I said, plenty of people out there, they don't, that's not what they do, right? Their job isn't that technology. I mean, you look at the Jetsons analogy, right? George would come home from work every day, and he'd complain that his button pushing finger was tired, right? It was sore. He had that, you know, that red throbbing finger from hitting the button all day,
right?
And a lot of people come home and they're like, you know what? I don't want to fiddle with the technology. You know, that's why I'm paying you to be the expert.
Exactly.
And there's that's probably still the majority of people, but a lot of the early adopters, a lot of the people that are jumping on, you know, automation now, they want to do that themselves, and giving them that option is really huge, and we've seen an explosion of interest. Again, not out yet, coming out. The app's going to get released in November, so keep your eyes on that. But you can see some demos and some cool stuff on it on the Savant website.
Which is Savant.com. If you guys,
Savant.com, yeah.
Yeah, if you guys are, if you want to see a little more, if you want to see Savant in action, and you don't have a friend who has that cool app, that cool system in their home, if you're lucky enough to have a Magnolia Design Center inside of one of your Best Buys, you can go down there. They have that stuff installed. It's pretty neat. It's cool. They'll give you a demo. They'll even let you touch it. Don't be afraid. Just don't break anything. You can check them out. They have them inside their design centers. I was there yesterday messing with it. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
If you want to check out, like I said, go to Savant.com. Check out what they have to offer. You can learn a little bit more there. If you guys are social like myself, all over the internet, if you go to facebook.com/officialSavantAV, that's the Facebook page. If Twitter still exists tomorrow, you can check them out at Savant Systems.
Hope it exists.
I hope so. What if it just disappears?
Wow, that'd be scary.
What would I do? What would I tweet about? I'd be like, exactly. Twitter's over. You can check out some of the cool videos to get a little more demo if you don't want to drive down there. You're tired, your button finger just doesn't work anymore. Have someone load up YouTube for you. Go to /user/SavantAB. If you're more of a professional person, you're wearing the tie and you just want to check out some of the people, LinkedIn.com company or /company/Savant-Systems. If you're more of a picture guy, go over to Instagram. They got some cool stuff there. I like pics. It's @SavantSystems. Or if you want the other side of pictures and you want to find out what's Pinteresting with Savant, it's at Pinterest.com/SavantSystems. All very similar names. You can check out all their stuff. Tim, if they want to get in touch with you, is there a good way to do that?
Yeah. Like you said, I think you hit all the... Geez, I'm trying to think if there's any social networks that you missed out there. If there are.
Google Plus, maybe? Tumblr? Hey, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. There are a couple. No, definitely look me up on LinkedIn. Again, I am, Tim McInerney Savant on LinkedIn. Or, you can always send me an email at tim.mcinerney@savant.com.
There you have it. And if you guys are interested in becoming dealers, is it just the best thing just to go on the website and look it up?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a there's a place for become an integrator on there. There's obviously a find an integrator place for anyone who's interested in Savant products. You can find a Savant authorized, certified Savant integrator near you. But if you do are interested in becoming an integrator, either in the U.S. or worldwide, go right to the website, to the Contact Us form, and there's a special section there for, hey, I want to become an integrator. We'll ask a couple of questions, and then someone will get in touch with you.
There you go, everybody. That was Savant Overview. If you guys heard anything you liked, you can tweet me on the Twitter, assuming that it still exists tomorrow again, @jmod3. If you want to yell at me in a more personalized email telling me my show sucked, go ahead and feel free to do so. It's Johnny Mota, JOHNNYMOTA, the number 3, @gmail.com. That's right, I like Google, so I have a Gmail account. Yeah, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, all that good stuff. You can find me. Tell me you liked the show. Tell me you hated it. Tell me something. But today's show has been about control and Savant. And Tim, I thank you for your time. I learned a lot. And as time progresses with the applications and the app coming out soon, maybe after that we can do like a follow-up and learn a little bit more about the Internet of Things and the company as well as you guys progress.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Johnny, thanks for having me on. I had a great time and really enjoyed it. It's great talking to you.
Yeah. Thanks again, everyone. This has been AV Insider. We'll catch you on the flip side of the Internet of Things.